Hi, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to the Coaching Call podcast. On this podcast, we'll cover various types of coaching by trainers in sports, martial arts, fitness, and business. We'll discuss each coach's methods to getting the most out of their respective athletes or clients and how they attempt to change the platform in which they coach. Join us on a fun adventure as we discuss unique coaching styles. Coaching is a universal part of how we get others to get something done. Join your host, Rafael, and his guests on this unique journey in coaching.
Hi, I'm Sifu Rafael, and this is the Coaching Call podcast. If you enjoy this episode, please subscribe and leave a review. This episode was made possible by listeners like you. Good morning, Cavalieri, Franco LaFranco. How are you, my friend?
Good morning. How are you, sir? I'm excited to be on. It's my pleasure and my honor to be on this. I'm a fan of yours.
Are you? I appreciate that very much. Yeah. And likewise. Why would you even be a fan of me? Who am I?
Three reasons. Number one, you are a really good coach. You're a master of your trade. And then you can also coach that and train that, which is a skill in itself. Mm. Number one. Number two, you lead by example. So you're not here as somebody who's going to, hey, you go do this and then forget what I do, right?
Yes.
And then third, you love to help people and make a difference. And you have a unique style about you, which is very humble, very down to earth, and you're easy to listen to because of that. And I appreciate that. And I appreciate all the difference you make. So when I was put onto your podcast, I was like, wow, this guy's really good. I enjoy listening to him. And I'm very picky. Like, I've only got so many people I listen to. You're one of them. So I feel like privileged and honored to be on here. So thank you.
Thank you. Now, where do I send the check?
Oh, that's funny.
You know, it's incredible when you can have someone that you feel mutually connected to, right? Someone who you know that they're doing something amazing. And that's how I feel about you. You are definitely doing everything you said about me. And it's actually, I think you were talking about you when you were talking about me. And I appreciate that so much. So I want to really dive into who you are, right? What made you who you are? By the way, I had a good friend of mine, Coach Lisa, and I was telling her, I was on the phone with her and I said, I have to go. I have Franco LaFranco. She goes, I love his name. It's so cool. You know? I said, yeah, but you know, he's actually cooler than his name. So do me a favor. Who inspired you to be the most amazing person? And I know that you are. Who inspired you to be the most?
Oh, first and foremost was my dad. Mm. My dad was always my hero growing up. And it's always interesting because there's a time where my dad could do no wrong, right? Like, I think for every parent, we have that. You know, they're perfect. And then you realize, oh, no, they're a human being. Like, and then actually I got to respect them more when I saw their humanity. So my dad was always my first inspiration. My dad was always my first motivator. I think he instilled a sense of competition in me that still drives me to this day. Nice. I remember being a kid and I would get like whatever the grade was, it doesn't matter in school. He'd say, well, couldn't you got better? Like, I could have been close to perfect. That wouldn't have mattered. Well, couldn't you get 100? Couldn't you get 99? I go, well, yeah. I go, then why didn't you? I'm like, I don't know. And then he always said to me, always be number one, never be number two. You know, always be number one, never be number three, whatever. So he instilled a sense of competition in me. And then he always said to me, never work for somebody. Mm. You know, whatever you earn, make sure it's your own. It's your own company. It's your own business. He started his own company as his first hair salon when he was 18 years old. He came from Italy at 18. He borrows money, goes into debt to open up a hair salon. Like, think about that, right? That's what he did when he first started. And so he was an entrepreneur at heart, and he instilled those qualities into me. And so the last time I had a job, I was 17, working as a bank teller. I got myself fired because I wasn't a very good employee. I was bad. So at 22, I started my own company. Finished college. I said, what am I going to do now? I got to start a company. Why? It's what I'm supposed to do. It's what my dad told me to do since I was 4 years old. So got into business. And, you know, my dad's little voice is in the background. The only problem was I had no idea what I was doing. I didn't know how to run a company. I thought it was easy to run a company. You start a company, you know, hire some people, you get an idea, and you make money.
Yeah. It's not that easy.
No. In fact, when I started my first company, I had a lot of hair. I had a lot more hair than you. And now look at me. It's called stress. All the stress.
Well, you got taller than your hair.
Oh, yeah. I outgrew it. That's right. I outgrew it. That's right. The brain is expanded up. Anyway, so I got into business, and my first three companies all failed. I didn't know what I was doing. And then I read an interesting book. Like, I was going to think to myself, well, is entrepreneurship for me? Am I genetically deficient? Is something wrong with me? And then I read a book of The Average Millionaire, bankrupts three companies before they become a millionaire. I said, I'm average. This is great. That inspired me. Like, when you know the stats, it inspires you. And then my next company figures, goes big and makes it. And but it was very stressful during the first three times. My first company was so stressful. What happened, but incredible learning lessons. I had to learn all those lessons to become successful in business. And I realized since that a lot of people are not willing to go through that pain and suffering to grow and to learn to get to the other side. I'm so grateful that I went through that and experienced that when I was younger, because I'm not sure I could do it right now when I was older. So to answer your question, my dad was my very first inspiration. I always looked up to him. Everywhere he wanted to go, I wanted to go. Whenever I could ask him questions, I would ask him questions. I'm sure I annoyed him every day for all the questions I would ask him about everything and anything. And then we grew up and we see them as a real person. I saw him as a real man, the kind of man that he was. And then, to be honest, I admired him more. He was always like the happiest guy in the world. He taught me I'd always be happy. He put a little plaque in our house, and it said this: when you walk in, for every 60 seconds of sadness, you lose 1 minute of happiness.
Ooh.
And every time anybody walked out, whenever I came home from school, whenever, you know, I was leaving, I would see that and would remind me, just be happy. Because if you're not, you're going to lose that happiness, that 1 minute, for every 60 seconds of sadness. Mm-hmm. And that was like my dad. My dad was always this guy that, okay, got to be happy. It doesn't matter what's going on. Don't worry. It'll be fine. It'll be fine. You know? So that was he was my biggest hero.
I love that plaque, by the way. That's pretty good. Good.
And then he had this cube on our coffee table in front of the TV. It was a six-sided cube, obviously. And on each side, he had an inspirational thing like, can you see possibility in every problem? Can you, like, every time is just something that you create. So he would, so when I'm watching TV, like I'm watching these, okay, I'm old. So I was watching like Gilligan's Island or Three's Company, all these crazy shows back when I was young. Right. That cube was always there, and I kept looking at it. And so, like, for example, one of the sides, it said, behind every problem lies possibility. So to me now, whenever I look at a problem, because I saw that every single day when I was watching TV, when I see a problem now, what's the possibility behind this? What can we create from this problem? And so it's a big lesson for me that whatever we're digesting as information, whatever that knowledge is that's coming in, we're internalizing it every day. So, like, imagine on that coffee table was, hey, you're a loser. Like, you know, you're a victim, whatever. That would have been what I would have been internalizing every day, but I wasn't internalizing that. So, like, for parents out there, you've got kids, put stuff out that will have them think positive and be creators versus victims in life.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's very interesting when you said to me that your dad was he came and became a hairstylist, and I think you and I are brothers somehow, because guess what my dad did?
No.
Yes. So, but here's the thing, right? My dad was a principal in Colombia. I'm Colombian, and my mom was a teacher. But when they came here, that meant nothing, because they didn't speak the language. So the education and all the knowledge that he had, it meant nothing. So guess what he did? He learned how to be a hairstylist. And then he opened up several salons. And I used to go there, and he used to pay me, I think it was $7 to clean the windows every Saturday. And it was me going in there, cleaning the windows and sweeping the floor.
That's what I used to do, the same thing, except he didn't pay me anything.
I got paid.
You got paid. You're ahead of me. That's awesome. That's so great. I always wanted to wash the hair. Did he ever let you wash the hair?
I got to wash hair, man.
Oh, I'm jealous. I never got to wash the hair.
But here's the other thing. I learned how to cut hair from watching him.
Wow.
And one of the things is I always get a haircut, right? And when you said that you had longer or more hair than I did, well, guess what? I did too. I had long hair up to my shoulders. And one day I'm outside my house and a woman passes by and she goes, "Excuse me, little girl, can you give me directions?" And I was like, "What?" She called me a little girl. I ran to my dad and I said, "Cut my hair, cut my hair." And I've never had long hair since then.
That's so awesome.
Pretty interesting that
we. How old were you when that happened?
I had to have been about nine.
Nine? That's awesome. Yeah. Nine. It's a great story.
Yeah. And then so what wound up happening is, you know, as an entrepreneur, my dad realized that you could not do what you are trained to do because there was that language barrier. But he said, there's something else I can do. So he went for that. And then, so that kind of taught me that when there's limitations put on you, as long as you don't put them on yourself, then you're golden.
That's right? Huge. I love that. It's so true. Because people will do that. The environment will do that. But then it's brilliant. I'm going to steal it. But I'll give you credit the first time I use that. But after that, it's mine.
Yeah. And that's why, you know, I love business because business, it's just another way of expressing how we can help each other.
Yeah.
Right. A lot of people go into business because they're looking for money, right? That's all their end game is, how rich can I be? But to me, I see business way differently. I see business as, what difference can I make in the world? So, and I think you're doing that, right? With what you were talking to me earlier, with the difference of the economy, of everything that's going on in this crazy world that we're living in the chaotic world that we're living in, how can we help more people? But Franco, you're doing it. Would you mind sharing?
So I read a book, The Science of Getting Rich. I don't know most people have heard of it. It was written in the early 1900s. Okay, incredible book by William Wattles. It's free. Anybody can download it. It's so old now, like nobody has any copyright probably on it. Just a PDF. But it was brilliant. And I remember, look, a lot of times we grow up with guilt around making money, or should we make money, or do I deserve to make money? Am I worthy? All of us have that, right? And not because about money, about everything in life, right? Because we have those insecurities growing up, you know, and then it gets translated into whatever you do, including money. So a lot of people have issues with making money for that reason. Not because they say money's hard to make. It's not. Just people they block off their own energy towards money. That's why, you know, it's called currency, because it's energy. And if you allow that to come to you, and it's effortless, a lot of people can make money that way, because it should be effortless to make money. The problem is we block it ourselves. So I remember reading this book, and it was during the time when I was struggling having companies be successful. And it was to your point. The point for me was to make money. It wasn't for anything else. So I'm reading this book, and it says in the book that all of us have a God-given right to be wealthy. I'm like, ooh, this is interesting. Let me keep reading. And it said, why that is because the wealthier you are, the more of a self-expression you can be in the world, the bigger the difference you can make. What is your self-expression, and how do you want that to translate? I'm like, oh, I never thought of it that way. It's so true. Because think about it. Like, if you're a business, can be your self-expression. What you do with that business is your self-expression. The more money you make, you can make more of a difference and make a bigger self-expression. Right. And so for me, from that point forward, my next company that I started was a fiber optic internet company. And the reason why I started that, because I had a small little internet company with one employee, and it was driving me crazy that I was paying all these fees to the big carrier. You know, like at the time I was in Canada, living in Canada at the time. I'm now in Arizona, but at the time I was living in Canada, and Bell Canada was the monopoly, and I had to use them to provide, I would buy circuits for them and sell it. But they were charging me a fortune, so my poor customer would pay more. So I said to myself, why can't I be Bill Canada? Why can't I do it? So I had this crazy idea. I put together a team of people. We created a business plan. We said, okay, to start, we need $40 million. Now we had no money, but let's go do it. We're gonna go raise $40 million. And so we put together a group of people, put together a business plan, how we're gonna do it. I brought some experts together that understood the fiber optic business and how we build. This is back in the early 90s. Mm-hmm. We were looking at building one of the first high-speed internet companies in the country and starting in Toronto. And so I went to a couple of people to raise the money. Everybody said no. So I went to company after company after company after company. Everybody said no. 10 companies, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, 100 companies all said no. Great idea, but no, we're not going to help you. Or that you can't compete against Bell. What are you, crazy? You can't do that.
Right.
The 104th person I presented to, love it, we're in. I was like almost in shock. Really? You're in? Right? He goes, yeah, we're in. In fact, we'll help you raise the other money. So I said, we're in for 10. There's 30 more to go. We'll help you raise the other 30. I said, great. And within literally a month, they helped us raise all $40 million. Mm. And the lead investor was a venture fund out of New York. Okay, one of the biggest venture funds in the United States out of New York. So as we're closing the documents and signing all the agreements, he looked at me and he says, congratulations, Franco. You've done something I've never seen done before. I said, what's that? Like, we went from no money to $40 million. Nobody does that.
Mm.
I've never seen it on Wall Street. I go, what do you mean? Because, well, usually you raise $500,000, then you raise $1 million, then you raise $5 million, then you go to 40. You went from zero to 40. You know what I told them? Thank God I didn't know that. I probably wouldn't have done it. Because, you know, I didn't know it wasn't possible. I just thought, okay, I need $40 billion. Let me go raise it. And that's what I did. And I just became this unstoppable machine of talking to person after person because I believed in what I was doing. Because what drove me, this goes back to your question, what drove me was bringing clients better internet pricing or not getting screwed and giving them higher speeds than the Bell Canada was giving, which were like dial-up speeds. I wanted to give them real internet at a real price. And that motivated and drove me. And then we did that and the company got started. We built one of Canada's very first high-speed internet companies in the 90s. So it was a great lesson to what you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Not knowing that you couldn't do it. I think that was a gift, right?
Ignorance is bliss. Yeah, exactly. It's true. Ignorance is bliss. Because if you don't know it's not possible, then it's possible, right? Anything's possible if you don't know. So I like to try, and my wife's great at teaching me this. She's like, don't know. Just why put ceilings or limitations on what's possible? Remove them. You know, she's great at that. She's great at removing limitations and what's possible and reminds me all the time. No, listen, you could do whatever you want. You can create whatever you want. Anything is possible. Don't put limitations on yourself. And it's a great lesson to everybody that we put them on ourselves.
We do. You know, there's also where people put them on us, but we allow it, don't we?
We do, 100%. So like, for example, when I was raising the money to build this internet company, people used to say to me, the internet, it's a fad. It's going to go away. Mm-hmm. Who's going to go online shopping? Nobody's going to do that. Who's going to go on the internet? People want to be face-to-face, person-to-person. I'm thinking to myself, this person's nuts. That's what I was thinking to myself, right? Mm-hmm. But I knew my vision. So you have to believe in your vision. You got to believe in what you're creating. And you can't let anybody talk you out of it because people will try to talk you out of it. In fact, I met with the time, I will mention his name, the president of Bell Canada, and he was one of the people that told me the internet wouldn't last.
Mm.
And in fact, they made such a mistake that they didn't even start their own internet company or their own ISP, and they had to go buy one for $750 million a few years later because they screwed up so bad.
Right?
So like, if that guy can get it wrong, anybody can get it wrong. And so that's why you have to be led by your convictions and your vision, and you can't let anybody get in the way of that.
That is the key to success, right? Understanding that if you put limitations on yourself, if you allow others to put limitations on you, then you will always be limited. but you're living a life of limitless, right?
Well, it's and a battle every day.
Telling you that as
it's,
well.
It's a battle every day. No, because look, when you live in a world where everybody's telling you who to be and what to do, mm-hmm. your job is to keep fighting, getting free of that, right? Mm-hmm. So the first thing is, there's this old saying, the environment always wins. So if you're living in a victim-y, blame environment, you're going to eventually become that if you don't break free from that. Mm-hmm. And so when I learned that, I realized, okay, I've got to surround myself with people like me, that think like me, that are up to big things like me, that want to create extraordinary things like me. Because if I don't, I will become like them. Mm-hmm. And so the thing that was so important to me was, okay, I want to live in a transformed environment, an environment of possibility where people believe that anything is possible. People are up to big things, creating things, because that keeps me inspired and in action all the time. And the minute I'm not in that environment, I shrink. I become like them, right? So for me, it was very important to create an environment that was going to support me, because it's a lesson for everyone. Create an environment that will support you in what you're up to, versus fighting what you're up to. And you have the power to do that. That's the cool part. You have the power to do that. And look, if you married that person, okay, you're in trouble. Somebody who's negative, you got to be careful. Your spouse is the most important decision you'll ever make, right? Because you're going to be sleeping with that person, living with that person, traveling with that person, every single day, maybe even working with that person. And so you got to be very careful who that person is. Because if that person is shooting you down, limiting what's possible for you, it makes it very difficult to become overcoming that to become successful. That's a big decision. So you got to create that environment for yourself.
Yeah, it's very, and you're right. It's very hard to put earplugs on when the person is constantly.
I don't know how you do it.
Doing
yeah,
this, right?
Yeah, you can't. It's impossible.
You can't live that way.
No.
So an important business decision is partners, personal partners and business partners, right? And you just talked about marriage, because that's a partnership. I believe it's a partnership, because even in how you raise your children, where do you live? How is the household kept? I think that's a business partnership that a lot of people, when we're young, what are we? Probably dumb. And we're not thinking long term. We're thinking, I love this person, but we're not thinking of, is this person the right one for me? Am I the right one for them? And then, so how do we go from that decision-making to a business partner decision-making? Because you didn't do this alone, the $40 million. You said you brought a team of people to be able to do that, right? So you had to believe in them. They had to believe in your vision as well. So how important is it for someone to really handpick the people they want to be associated with?
Math, huge. So I remember my first company, my partner took the money. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what I was doing. I was left with debt. I was left with 30 employees. I was left with an office lease. I was left with everything and stress at the age of 22. Mm-hmm. And that was my first business experience, you can imagine, right?
Right.
I had this gentleman come in, don't forget this, he had bought art from this gentleman, but hadn't paid him. He was a native Indian. And he came in to the office, it was like 4 p.m, and the secretary, the front of the receptionist called me, goes, hey, we have somebody here who wants to get paid. For what? He goes, apparently we bought art from him, and he wants to get paid. So he sits down in the lobby, and he won't leave. He's doing like a native Indian sit-in, like he will not leave, chanting, all that stuff. I'm like, what do I do? And he goes, well, I'm not leaving until you pay me. I go, what do we owe you? $4,500. I go, $4,500? This is back in the 90s. I go, I don't have $4,500. How am I going to pay you this? He goes, well, I'm not leaving then. And he does his chat thing, and he's sitting in. I'm like, oh, my God, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do? I'm like, so I said, well, I got to find the money. So I start calling some friends. I was just figuring it out, right? And I somehow over the next hour calling some buddies, I raised the money. I go, guys, can you please bring it to me? I'm downtown. Please bring me the money. I can't leave here. Okay. So I had to only convince him. I had to have him come down and give me the money. Anyway, I gave him the money. He left. But that was a function of wrong partners and wrong partnerships and people that didn't have your best interest at heart, but their own best interest at heart. And so you get to learn and you study people over the years of, you know, what makes a good partner. You study them and you study how they are. You study when you eat with them, how they are. Do they eat first or do they wait till you start? Like, how are they? Do they come in with open the door for you or not? Like, how are they? How do they interact? And you can see it becomes obvious after a while of partnering with people who are the ones that you partner with. Second, we got to know a little bit about their history. What's their work ethic like? Because the last thing you want to do is resent people, right? Like, what if you work 20 hours a day and they work four? That's not a good partnership.
No.
It's not going to be a good partnership. So, and the same thing goes with relationships and everything. Are you compatible from the things that are important to you? Mm-hmm. So what I would recommend is look at the four or five things that are important to you. If it's in a relationship, great. Or it's in your business, great. And see if you align on those five things. And if you do, you got a great foundation to do that, to create a partnership. But then again, it's also going to be luck. I hate to say it. Sometimes you end up being lucky and people come together at the right time, whether it's divine intervention or it's luck or whatever you want to believe. Sometimes it's just meant to be a great partnership. And I've had those where it just works out great. And sometimes it doesn't. And you don't know. And actually, it can be even more problematic than a marriage or a relationship. Right. Because when you have a business, I've seen partnerships explode and deteriorate that ruined employees' lives and their lives and their families' lives because their business relationship fell apart, which was sad.
Yeah. I've witnessed people almost kill themselves, not only themselves, but their partner as well.
100%.
I had a guy try to run his partner over with his car. And it was like, whoa, we had to intervene. We had to intervene and say, this is, you don't want to go to jail for this, right? So it's important to understand. So talk to me about 2007, where there was an addition to your name.
Oh, started with the CAV. Okay, so interesting. So because of the companies I had built, because of the success I had being an entrepreneur, there was a company from Italy that came and did a biography on me, and they showed it in Italy, and they said, "Oh, let's look," and they kept replaying it on Italian TV. Well, apparently the Italian minister saw that the success that I had, and he said, "You know what? Let's see if he's worthy of being nominated to be knighted." What does that mean? So in England they have sir, in Italy they have something called cavaliere. Which is, as you see, the short form CAV dot you put in front of your name. And so I got a call from the government saying, congratulations, Mr. Lofranco, congratulations on your success. Because both your parents are Italian, you're able to be nominated to be knighted by Italian government. At that point, I'd never heard of it. So I go, what are you talking about? I don't even know what you're talking about. So I called my dad. I go, do you want to? Oh, yeah. Wow. They did that? Yeah, it's a big deal. And he explained to me what it is and how it works. I go, wow, that's pretty cool. Anyway, I forgot about it. A year later, they called me back. And they said, congratulations, Mr. Lofranco, you made it to the next level. I go, how many levels are there? We don't know, but we'll let you know if something happens. I said, okay, I forgot about it again. The next year, they called me back. Same thing. The following year, they called me back. Same thing. The fifth year, they finally said, congratulations, Mr. Lofranco, it's official. You will be knighted by the Italian government. I'm like, wow, that's so cool.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's cool. So we had a big ceremony around it. It was pretty amazing. And so for my parents, it was obviously a bigger deal than it was to me. For me, it was just like, okay, it's like cool little acknowledgement of the success that I had and the companies that I built. Mm-hmm. And now it's part of my initials in my name. That's kind of like what it is. It doesn't really help me in North America because nobody knows what the heck it means. When you go to Italy, it's a little bit different. They treat you a little bit different when you go there. Like, upgrade your hotel or sometimes give you some free food at a restaurant and they'll see that on your credit card. You know, oh, Signor Lofranco,
Cavaliere. We need to take care of our Cavaliere.
Yeah, so that's funny.
So here's a very interesting thing that when you think of it, it was an honor, right? And it was bestowed upon you because of what you've done and the accomplishments you've had. It's very interesting when in the U.S., people try to do something like that, but you have to pay to be in it. So I've been nominated so many times to be in the Hall of Fame for martial arts, but with a fee of you'll be guaranteed. I'm like,
oh, you know they charge you?
I'm like, I'm not interested. I said, you know, to be honored is one thing. To have to pay to be honored is a different thing. So you know what? I don't need to be in some Hall of Fame for, because I paid into it, right?
Is that because it's private and they have to survive? Is like is that why, or like how do they? Why do they?
I don't know. It's a money making theme. Yeah, so obviously. you know, listen. I believe that if I'm helping someone, that's the only person I'm honored by. If somebody else wants to honor me, that's cool. That's fine, right? But you got honored the right way because they saw your accomplishments. They didn't ask, and they kept going over 5 years, man. That was a long time in the process, and you kept forgetting about it.
I keep forgetting. I did. I honored everything they claimed back. Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. It's true.
Yeah. But you know what? When it comes to where people are trying to make money, is that they get you to excited. Oh, you've been nominated. You're going to be in the Hall of Fame and da 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 da. And I'm like, okay, cool. What does that mean? That means that you have to buy a table. It's $1,000 a seat and da 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 da. And I'm like, oh, okay. So you're looking for 10 grand is what you're looking for. I get it. I understand. I said, nah, I'm busy. I don't have time for that kind of stuff. But when it comes to impacting the world the way you have so far, earlier when we got started, you were telling me about when the economy hits at a certain level, that people are starting to have more pain in their lives, right? Because that's what's happening right now.
Yeah.
So when we get real, you also saw it back when you created the internet company to help people. So let's talk about what you're doing now that you're helping so many people.
That's a great question. So when I was having companies with employees, because one company I grew to almost 300 employees, Here's what bothered me about traditional business. My employees would come and ask me for a raise. Right. Franco, I need a raise. Franco, I got to do this. I have expense. And I always felt bad because, you know, in a company, there's only so much you can pay an employee, right? Mm-hmm. And they were never going to honor me. That was never going to happen, right? It's my company. Mm-hmm. And so it was always a problem for me, like morally, being in that environment and that structure. And so back in 2000, I would say 2006 and 2007, I was introduced to a direct sales opportunity where it was involving internet and telecommunications and things like that, where you could own your own business virtually and you could make as much money as you want and anybody could out earn anybody. I go, oh, that's an interesting model. I've never seen a model like this before.
Mm.
And so I said, so I started studying it more, and then I realized, wait a minute, not only can I make a lot of money without the stresses and headaches of traditional business, having an office, employees, all the things that were killing me, but I can also help other people do that because I love to help people make a difference. So I got into two things. I got into leading seminars in personal growth and development because I love that. That was exciting to me and helping that. And I had some great mentors and teachers in my life, including some billionaires that taught me some incredible things in business that I could then apply that to business and teach it. And second, that I could be involved in something that can make a difference. And so over the years, I've helped thousands of people start their own business, build their own residual income. Because the other thing I've learned is that people want residual income if they even knew what it is. Too many people are exchanging time for money. It's ridiculous. Mm. And because they're exchanging time for money, they can't even appreciate life. They can't take any time off. They're working, especially in the United States, where everything's expensive. Healthcare is expensive. Education is expensive. Everything's expensive. And so if you can't take a breather every once in a while, that's why, you know, as bad as the pandemic was, there was some silver linings. One of them is it allowed people to sit back and say, well, is this what I really want to do with my life? Is this job really what I want? No, a lot of people never went back to work. I go, it's not what I want, because you have a chance to finally breathe, sit back. And why I'm passionate about helping people make residual income and earn that is because it gives them a chance to work. Look, I took a whole year off. One of my passions was to be a pilot. Okay. Now, look, I'm not the smartest guy in the world. So for me to be a pilot requires heavy duty training because I don't want to kill myself.
No.
So I took a whole year off. I bought my own airplane. I learned on my own airplane, became a pilot. Over a year period, I hired an incredible instructor, one of the best in the country. He taught me because I didn't want to make a mistake, right? Because
You
know, you have to know yourself, right? For me, I'm not a great student, so I needed somebody like on me every single day. But why could I take a year off? Because I had something called residual income that allowed me to do that and take time off. So I'm passionate about teaching people about that. So look, it's great to make money, but if you don't have the time to enjoy that money, I don't care how much money you make. It's irrelevant. It makes no difference. You can't take it with you. There's no ATM machine on the other side of the world, the universe, on the other side of life. It doesn't exist. Oh, I got all this money. I'm going to take it. No, it doesn't exist. And so, and most of the time, your family is going to resent you. I know so many wealthy people that their lives are in shambles with their families. Kids are full of drugs, you know, divorces left and right because they're so busy making money that they don't have the time to enjoy their life. Yeah. And I became so passionate about, listen, can we help people make some residual income? Because I know what it's like to work those hours. I know what it's like sleeping on the couch in my office every single night, having no life. Thank God I did it before a family, right? Because then that would have been a destruction. And so for me, once I realized there was better ways of making money, I became super passionate about teaching that.
Nice. Beautiful. Beautiful. And the fact that you're impacting other people and you're helping them understand how to make money. So we've put it up here. You're on Instagram, Cav Franco, right? Easy to find you. And then on LinkedIn, right? Cav Franco, LaFranco, and then you have some numbers behind it. But I'm sure if people just looked you up on LinkedIn,
you
definitely would come up. So when we think about everything that you're doing, everything that anyone who wants to change the world, why should we listen? Why should we listen to you? Why should we listen to anyone who wants to do anything? What's the message?
Messages don't listen to me. And don't listen to you either. You know who they should listen to? What their inner voice is telling them should be what they want to create. This is everybody's self-expression is different. And so here's what I would tell people. Go on an inner journey of self-discovery and discover who you are and what you're passionate about. We live in an era. This is what I love about this time of life, we're living in. That you can, there's so much access to information, but that doesn't mean we're better at communicating. It doesn't mean that. It just means we have access to information. So what matters is take that information, internalize it, and go on a journey of self-discovery, of learning what are you passionate about. Look, I've given up many opportunities that probably would make me a lot more money, but it doesn't inspire me. It wouldn't excite me. It wouldn't be my self-expression in this world while I'm here. Because while I'm here, I want to be able to impact the world in the way that lights me up, that I think I can make the biggest impact. And that's what I do today in my life, is do that. So I tell people, look, go in your own journey. What lights you up? What gets you excited? What's going to motivate you? And then be true to that. And look for ways in which that can manifest itself in reality in this world. Yeah. How could you create that? What could you do? And that's what I would stick to. And so don't listen to you and I, because we're going to do what's true to us, right? Because if all of us are doing what's true to us versus doing what we're told to do, like a bunch of zombies and drones, this world would be extraordinary. Because imagine a world of people. This is one of the things I'm committed to. A world of people living their full self-expression every day. Because I believe this, the ultimate act of selfishness is being selfless. That's one of my favorite sayings. And what that means is when you really become truly self-aware, you're going to realize the ultimate act of fulfilling yourself is impacting people in a very profound way. The question is, in what way will that manifest for you? And what way will that show up for you? But that requires a journey. It requires a journey of self-discovery.
A deep journey. You and I were talking earlier about, and I know you have to go, about you were up early. And we talked about anxiety and the feelings and all this. And I said, the reason you were up early, it wasn't because you were anxious. It's because you were excited, right? And we need to be excited every day about our life, our opportunities. I like the SEO, if you will, is see every opportunity, because everywhere we turn, there's opportunity. There's opportunity in chaos too, but we have to find it. We have to find the beauty in it, right?
Yeah, which goes back to my little cube when I was a little kid at my coffee table.
I love that cube.
Can you see opportunity where the problem lies? And that's really the magic, because if all you see are problems, then it'll shut you down. But if you're seeing possibility, you'll see what's possible.
Do you have that cube?
No, it drives me crazy. I mean, you know what? I've been on the internet trying to find it, and I can't find it. So anybody out there that knows where this cube is, message me.
Hey, you know what?
Please.
I think you and I have to team up and create one, and we have a new company.
Hey, see, this is why I like you. See, for you're a brilliant strategist and businessman.
We are doing this.
Let's create one. I love it.
You and I, we're going to create a company, Cube Squared.
Actually, you're going to laugh. My nickname in school was Cube. You want to know why?
Why?
Okay, we'll end the show this way. My full name. Okay. So my first name is Franco. My last name is Lofranco. What do you think my parents, in their infinite wisdom, will put as my middle name?
Frank? I don't know.
John Franco.
Oh.
G-I-A-N Franco. So my full name is Franco, Gianfranco Lofranco.
Beautiful.
So that's why my name is Cube.
There you go. It's perfect.
We will create a cube. Love it.
So we need to start that company, you and I. Listen, amazing stuff as always. I know you're on the run. Thank you so much for spending time with me. I am so happy we're connected, and keep inspiring and making a difference in the world, my friend.
Thank you, Sifu. Same with you. You're an inspiration to myself and to so many others. Thank you, buddy. Appreciate it.
All right. Likewise. Enjoy. Bye-bye.